Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology. Happy Monday, everybody. Today we are going to sneak preview Mars's upcoming conjunction with the planet Uranus in the sign of Taurus. This is one of the biggest and perhaps most dynamic transits of the year. It's not one that lasts forever, but in my overview for the year, as I said at the beginning of this month, I circled this transit as potentially one of the most volatile and also important and potentially helpful transits. It all just depends on, you know, where we're each at and how it's affecting our birth charts. But this is a super powerful transit that we're going to look at today. I'm going to talk about five themes to watch for and three spiritual insights that we may gain through this transit. I think there's probably an unlimited number of, you know, insights you could have, but these are three that I feel like people often reflect in this way, in these three ways, upon experiences with Mars and Uranus. So we'll get into that too. Before we get started, don't forget to like and subscribe, share your comments in the comments section, click on the notification bell for updates. You can get notified when I go live. You can always find a transcript of my daily talks on nightlightastrology.com. And if you have any questions about my readings or my classes, feel free to email info@nightlightastrology.com. All right, so let's take a look at the real-time clock. And oops, I think I had the wrong graphic up to start with. August 1st, Mars conjoins Uranus. Let's take a look at this on the real-time clock now. So here is the transit itself. And we are going to, here we go. And you can see Mars and Uranus coming together in Taurus right here. Also with the north node of the moon, which is like steroids, kind of boosts everything up and creates this very powerful amplification effect. According to ancient astrologers, the north node of the moon amplifies the planet that is touching it for good or bad. So with a malefic, unfortunately, that will tend to amplify the Mars-like qualities, which means it's extra Marsy. So a little extra spice. Now, we're going to break down this theme in depth today, and we will also be looking at it next week on probably on August 1st, or actually, I guess we have horoscopes coming out, so it'll be maybe on the 2nd. We'll probably be reflecting on it, and I highly encourage people to share their stories. Don't forget, you can always use the hashtag grabbed or email us grabbed@nightlightastrology.com to share a story about your experience of the Mars-Uranus transit this week. But here's the deal. This transit is building all week long. If we start off on Monday, July 25th, you can see that it's just about 4 degrees off. And by Monday, the 1st, a week from now, it's conjoined. And then we're going to give it at least 3 degrees of separation, which takes us through August 5th. So you've got, you know, we've got like 2 weeks really of dealing with this energy in the air in a very strong way. So it's worth paying attention to because, you know, Mars, Uranus, North Node, all together with Mars in a debilitated sign, a sign of Venus. So that's a tense place for Mars. Got to figure out how to do Marsy things, but also while trying to do Venusian things. It can also just describe Mars and Venus combinations. Sometimes the two are, you know, it's tense like lovers, tense like the tango. So these are things that we have to consider as well. Well, let's pop. I'm going to go into now, after looking at the real-time clock, sorry, I'm going to go into five themes that I think help us capture some of the most important Mars-Uranus dynamics. So these are my top five themes to watch for in the week ahead. And I think probably you'll find, for example, in this week, when I do August's overview, I have a guest coming on. We're going to be talking about Mars-Uranus in depth in that video as well. And then you'll see me looking at Mars-Uranus in the horoscopes for August for each of the whole sign houses, so each rising sign. So the first theme is defiant individualism. Mars is the god of war. Mars is the god of action, cutting, defiance, competition, conflict, tends to be a very individualistic planet, more concerned with will power and strength, ultimately power and strength with virtue translate into effectiveness. So it can be a sign of you know, being strong and effective at things that you're doing that aren't out to harm other people or aren't inherently about, you know, dominance or winning at the cost of others or anything nasty at all. However, the dark side of Mars is definitely, you know, it's like a, you know, it's someone with, it's the selfish, individualistic, willful, domineering type. So we do have to be careful of that kind of energy this week. Uranus, on the other hand, likes to break barriers and boundaries, does not like the status quo, likes to invent, push the envelope. Uranus is naturally rebellious, eccentric, and disruptive. So when you pair these two together, one of the combinations that you will see over and over again is a kind of defiant individualism. I will do whatever I want to do. I will be free. I will be me. I will speak and think for myself. My own sovereignty, autonomy, whether it's political or whether it's spiritual or whether it's wanting to get out of a relationship and be on one's own, or whether it's breaking from a company to start your own consulting business, or whatever the case may be, the feeling of defining oneself with strength, will, vigor against what others think or say that you should or ought to do. It is a nonconformist, defiant, radical, individualistic kind of energy. It is not the kind of energy that you want to mess with in line at the grocery store if someone starts copying an attitude, because it'll escalate very quickly. One thing about this transit is that the defiance and the individualism, you know, when tempered, great, it could, you know, be really helpful. But Mars Uranus with Rahu, the north node of the moon, not likely to be as tempered or even keeled. Now, there is a sextile from Venus in Cancer that's coming through and sort of, I don't know, giving it like a little cool, like a nice rain on the kind of dry, hard tendency of Mars and Taurus. Mars tends to be a hot planet and Taurus a dry sign, so it can be a little like rigid and bullish. But there is a little bit of a pacifying influence from Venus in the sky, but all the same, you don't want to, things can escalate quickly, and, you know, a battle of wills and ways, like it's my way or the highway, you know, it's not the time to try to tell off the person who cuts you off trying to get a parking spot at the grocery store. you know, stay away from battles, like hot reactionary contests of will. This defiant individualistic energy is potentially very productive. It can give you the courage and the wherewithal to do something that you've been scared to do. It can give you the moxie and the confidence to take a stand. So those are all good things. But again, be careful of the reactionary, I'm gonna do it my way and I don't care who I harm or what kind of conflict, or, you know, how quickly or radically things escalate in the process. I'm going to be right at all costs, that kind of thing. That leads to number two, which is righteous declarations. You know, Mars Uranus has a kind of declaration of independence. It is a transit that can easily stir up ideas about what constitutes freedom and different definitions of freedom, my rights versus your rights. Well, I have a right to feel safe, for example, is often pitted nowadays against the right to free speech. Like I should be able to say what I want and someone else should not have to feel like they're in harm's way or something like that. So there are, and I'm not talking about anything specific, just questions about whether it's free speech or censorship, whether it has something to do with the rights of particular groups or the feeling, aside from any kind of group or political affiliation or big political conversation, just the feeling that my rights or my will or my sovereignty or my dignity or my choice or my own opinions matter, and sort of like, I don't give a damn what you think. That's very Mars Uranus. Now in Taurus, the trick might be trying to figure out how to do this peacefully. You have Mars, Uranus, and a Venus-ruled sign, north node of the moon, a sextile from Venus in Cancer. It's not like this transit is totally bereft of diplomatic energy, but it's tricky. It's tricky. It's about trying to, you know, Taurus likes to stabilize things. You could be looking at people who are not going to change their mind about something. Defiant individualism, righteous declarations, righteousness in general, and I'm not going to change, you're not going to budge me, you can't push me, I'm not going to move. When it comes to the things or ideas or positions that give us a sense of power or stability, you might find that you are fighting tooth and nail to maintain those things in the face of other people telling you that you should do or be something different. So the probably one of the most dangerous aspects of this transit tends to be the fanatical extremism. For example, Mars-Uranus, and I hate to say it, but Mars-Uranus is potentially like an act of terror against a group that you don't like. I'm not at all trying to scare people or make predictions. I'm just giving examples of the archetypal combination. For example, if people were to enact violence outside of an abortion clinic, or if people at some kind of a protest were, the protesters were to attack or harm the people they were, people or thing that they were protesting against, or vice versa, you know, clashes between, for example, the police and protesters, that kind of thing is very Mars-Uranus. It's about the potential for something righteous to go off the rails. We can be right about things and so wrong about our rightness. If that makes sense, we can feel very convicted about the importance of something, and yet we can then develop a kind of, you know, bravado and a harmful or destructive, egotistical sense of defiance and lose ourselves. We can weaponize our point of view, even if we really feel like our point of view is ultimately about things like peace or something virtuous. Now, the righteous declaration, the you know, even like the idea of the Declaration of Independence, like the, an archetypal theme. There's war involved. There's a declaration. There's independence. There's fighting. You know, the revolutions are often bloody. This is Mars Uranus has the kind of bloody revolution feeling. Now, number three is breakthrough inceptions, a little bit different. This has more of the feeling of a breakthrough that leads to starting something, or starting something creates a breakthrough, either way. Mars loves to start things. It is very inceptional. In an archetypal sense, Mars is an inseminator. Mars is very phallic in that respect. And now just think of that as an image or a metaphor. It doesn't have to be taken literally. Uranus, on the other hand, is the sudden breakthrough, defiant breaking of boundaries or barriers. For example, Mars-Uranus is often associated with rape, unfortunately. Mars-Pluto is in a similar way, and Mars-Neptune is sometimes too, but usually through some kind of drugging. I'm not trying to be ominous. It's just these are just true archetypal associations with Mars. When you think about the potential to start something in a way that is in violation of a law or a rule, it could be that you're starting a revolution by virtue of breaking a law. So breakthrough inceptions can have a lot of different meanings. It could be something as awful as rape. It could be something as, historical as some kind of social or political movement, an inception that involves the breakdown of a governmental structure or a regime of some kind that's being toppled. So it has a real dark side to it. And also, you know, it has the potential to be about revolutionary new things. So that combination this week, I don't want that to put people on edge or make people afraid, but it is something to be aware of. That's why earlier I was saying, you know, don't get into it at the grocery store. It just, there's an energy in the air right now of, you know, people sort of flying off the handle with the sense of my way or the highway, or my righteousness is everything here. I'm in the right, so I don't care what happens to you, or I want what I want and I'll do whatever I have to do to get it. A real erratic energy. Number four would be wrecking things, breaking things, accidents, injuries, fender benders. Because of the reckless, volatile, and erratic nature of Mars and Uranus, you do have to be careful of, you know, if you put your foot in your mouth, you could ruin something. You could burn a bridge. If you aren't careful about temperance this next week or two, the potential for something to get wrecked emotionally, relationally, good faith, charity, a sense of trust. It doesn't have to be a physical thing. It could be. I mean, you will see that there will be stories. I promise you, if people share grab stories, there are going to be stories about someone, you know, stubbing their toe or stepping on a piece of glass or something. I mean, not that I want that to happen to anyone, obviously, but it's like every time Mars and Uranus have squares, oppositions, or conjunctions, you see that sort of sudden cutting, accidental kind of, you know, it's kind of a bummer. Usually I have very rarely ever seen anything like, you know, really, you know, terrible. Usually it's just kind of like, I've heard people like burning their finger on the stove, or, you know, accidentally cutting their finger with a knife while cutting the vegetables. It's like something like that. But you can also see that like technology may be on the fritz, or there could be like cyber attacks. Mars Uranus has a very like, Uranus related with Prometheus, the fire thief. So there's sometimes a quality of thievery and sudden taking or violating of boundaries, like a little bit. Mars Uranus is a little bit like Robin Hood. There is the potential also for transgressions and the taking of things, or the almost like an iconoclast, like a deliberate breaking of something holy or sacred that, you know, maybe there's, for example, and obviously in like, I think of the Disney movie Robin Hood that my kids have watched, and, you know, they sort of break the king's carriage and steal his gold. So there's an act of defiance. So there's something like that in the air too. Number five is sudden or unexpected actions or reactions. Just the sudden, unpredictable nature of what you might suddenly do or the way you might suddenly react. And I think I've kind of said that through the first four, so I won't say much more about that other than be careful of, you know, impulse control this week. All right. Now, I think there are three spiritual insights that come with this, that so many great wisdom traditions have shared similar insights about dealing with this kind of energy, which is perennial. It comes around in circles and cycles. Number one, sometimes when we get in, especially when the righteousness dial is turned up, like we feel really right and strong and willful and my way or the highway because we feel that something is right or true, it's important to remember that, you know, in the a lot of Eastern philosophy says that, morality is a feature of divinity. You know, but divinity is also beyond morality. There's something about divinity that involves conversations about good and bad, about right and wrong, of course, and it's a part of our everyday life and not to be denied or dismissed or bypassed or whatever. But at the same time, there's something about divinity that is ultimately not bound by anything. It is actually beyond morality. There is a way in which we have to go beyond good or bad itself, paradoxically, to understand the fluid, sensitive nature of acting morally, that morality is not just a set of rules, and it is not a legalistic feature that somehow trumps the nature of relationship. Like, reality is living and alive. And morality is part of how life experiences and expresses. But sometimes when we get righteous, it is as though the human, the personal, and the relational drop off because we put morality on a pedestal higher than the divine itself. And we can be, it's weird how, you know, morality is such an important part of spiritual development, living virtuous lives. but we can also make a false idol out of morality. And usually the byproduct of that is self-righteousness. And the shadow of self-righteousness, of course, is hypocrisy. We have to be very careful of, you know, our virtue being so strong and pronounced and willful that, you know, we don't recognize how destructive and violent it is, and how the more we are like that, the less we are in touch with our own frailty, weakness, pain, suffering, shortcomings. And so there's a way of being virtuous, but it is always, you know, morality is always something in service to the living relationship between beings and between God and other beings. So it's just an important thing to not lose track of that, because it's one of the things that tends to happen when Mars Uranus takes over with a righteous fury. We forget that ultimately, you know, we can make a false idol of just about anything in place of love, and morality can be one of them. Number two is that freedom and flexibility are a sacred pair. It's funny how ironically rigid we can get with Mars Uranus. Mars Uranus touts some kind of freedom, freedom of expression, freedom of individuality. And it's like the louder we get about our right or our will or our individual way, our sovereignty, our agency, you know, the more intense we get about our freedom, ironically, we often lose our flexibility. And one of the things that you see in the yogic tradition is always this pairing of freedom and flexibility, that freedom is ultimately a state of being, a state of mind, a state of consciousness. We are inherently free. And one of the ways that we maintain that is not just in how we assert that freedom, but also in how we maintain it by remaining flexible. So it's just a good week to remember that freedom and flexibility are a sacred pair. And if you're really amplifying the sense of freedom and agency and rights and sovereignty and will and, you know, personal individuation, but you're also getting less and less flexible, you're becoming more and more rigid, that, you know, it's good to check in. It's just good to check in and make sure, are freedom and flexibility co-present in me right now? And then finally, number three, show me, don't tell me applies to individuation. I don't know. I can't think of anyone from the Dalai Lama to all the great teachers, of yoga, to some of my favorite Christian contemplatives, to some just sages in any walk of life who don't say something similar, which is that the things that matter the most in terms of our individual stages of growth and unfolding as in, you know, people, I'm becoming something, I'm defining what is me, what feels right to me, what isn't me. The best way to enact that is not to go preaching about it, but to just be it, to become who we are becoming in action, in deed, is to embody it. So be careful, because sometimes Mars Uranus thinks to itself, if I pound my fist on the table and declare, you know, that righteous declaration, if I declare who I am or who I'm becoming or what is me and what is not me or what I stand for, you know, put a flag in the ground type of thing, you know, that often does not lead to an embodiment of the very thing. It's as though the more we push it, who we've become, onto other people, the less embodied that very thing that we feel that we are becoming finds its home in us. We have to be it. It's not just a walk your talk kind of thing. It's almost more extreme than that. It's almost more like before you talk, walk. You know, it's like walk it for a while until you've really become it, and then it'll be easier to talk about it. Not that you get what I'm saying. It's just a general principle. I think it's really helpful. It's like, you know, this week, could it be that you have the most powerful individual sense of, you know, personal, psychological, spiritual revolution, and yet you don't feel the need to go and like with your, you know, rapier out into the world, swashbuckling to tell everyone about it, or to, you know, pee in a circle and create some kind of turf around you. I think that, you know, our individualism, insofar as we immediately go out and try to socially stake our claim, turns into tribalism. And, you know, sometimes, you know, it's good to have a tribe, it's good to have groups, and it's good to have identification with within cultures and groups and families and everything like that. But when it comes to individuality, it's like, be careful not to cast your gems right away out into the social field, because as soon as you do, you're sort of losing the very unique thing that is coming to fruition within you. So that's something I've learned over the years, is that, you know, I remember when I was younger, for example, I'd have ayahuasca ceremonies and I'd learn these very important things about myself. And then I would often, you know, right away try to go and tell everyone about those things, because it felt like that would make it more real. And over time, probably just age, and I guess maybe just the natural course of life, I'm sure anyone who's older than me or my age is probably laughing, being like, this is just aging. But I think as you age, it's also like, you know, spiritually or literally, biologically, there's a sense that I'm just going to see how this fits, almost like you're trying on a new outfit. Let me just see how it fits for a while without anyone really knowing that I'm wearing this yet, you know what I mean? And people start noticing, you know, and then maybe you start talking about it a little bit, but it's like, give yourself a chance to inhabit and feel the joy of that new thing that you're becoming. Just simple thoughts. If they don't work for you, you know, set them aside. There's probably other insights applicable to this transit that will. So that's what I've got for today. I hope this was helpful for you guys. Big transit coming up. A few more times we'll be talking about it. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Share your comments. Click on the notification bell for updates. If you want, you can get a transcript of my daily talk every day on my website, nightlightastrology.com, where you can also learn more about my readings and courses. Email if you have any questions, info@nightlightastrology.com. If you have stories this week, share them using the hashtag grabbed. Ancient name for the planets was grahas, showing up in our lives. In very interesting ways, they often seize our consciousness. And then if we reflect upon them, then we can grasp their meaning. So you can also email your story if you want to. grabbed@nightlightastrology.com is the email address to send your stories to if you don't care to share them in the chat box. That is what I have for today. Hope you guys are having a good one. See you again tomorrow.